Thank you. We are in Perek Yud Bet, chapter 12. And again, the previous part of the parak, the previous part of this chapter, was Shmuel's final national address. He began with what was potentially a defense of him, of himself. Hello. He began with what may have been, maybe read as a defense of himself. We talked about that already. We're not going to do that again. And then he shifted into a recap of the history of the Jews being in need and Hashem rescuing us. And he talked at first about Moshe and Aharon in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, and then he went into the Shoftim. And what we were up to here was the odd list of Shoftim he mentioned, as well as the odd list of enemies who he mentioned. Because if you take a look at Perek Yud Bet, it's chapter 12, and specifically you look at first, the Pasuk Tes, sentence 9, which listed the enemies who attacked us. It was Sisera, who was the general for the Canaanim, and then he mentioned the Plishtim, and then he mentioned Moav, and we noted that this is problematic, because Moav attacks us in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. That's at the start. The second Shofate we have listed in Shoftim is Ehud ben Gera, and he fights against Moav. And the Plishtim are much later, the Canaanim are later, so why did you go out of order? Sorry? Well, the fact that he omits nations, I mean, he's going to omit a lot, but it's odd to go out of order. And then we noted that in Pasuk Yud Aleph, he lists the Shoftim Hashem has sent, and he lists Yerubal, Bedan, Yiftach, and himself. And we said Yerubal Gidon is from the 6th to 8th Prakim of Shoftim. Bedan is Shimshon, and he is Prakim Yud Gimel to Tet Zayin, chapters 13 to 16 of Shoftim. And then Yiftach is back earlier again, in the middle between the two of them. So he seems to be going out of order. And
it's also interesting that he mentioned Sisera, which is in the Shofet chapter of Dvorah.
Yeah.
And he doesn't mention Dvorah at all.
Correct. He doesn't match them up. These are not matched up. Enemy is not matched up to the Shofet who saved us from that enemy. That's a valid point. Thank you. So we talked about the choice of Shoftim already last time, and the fact that he chooses Shoftim who represent different categories. Some of them seem to be Nevi'im, some of them are decidedly not Nevi'im, some of them are stronger, some of them are less so. And we talked about the message that Ralbag states and that Abarbanel states, which is that the point is that Hashem can save you with any leader. And again, the subtext of that is, you asked for a king, because you said, oh, we need a king to lead us and to save us and to rescue us, but the truth of the matter is, you didn't need a king. You would have been just fine with Hashem giving you whoever he chose to give you in order to save from trouble. So that was the last thing that we had said, but I wanted to talk about the chronological disorder here. The Mefarshim, the commentators, generally try to solve the problem by putting the list in order, showing that it actually is in order. So, for example, on the list of enemies, Malbim says, he doesn't state the problem, but he simply says, Moav here is referring to when Ammon attacked us in the time of Yiftach. That's what it's talking about. And that Moav joined Ammon. Because when you look at Yiftach's speech to Ammon, if you remember the story, it's in Shoftim Perek Yud Aleph, chapter 11, Ammon attacks, and the Jews go to Yiftach and say, help us, you should be our leader. And Yiftach's first step after getting that position of leader is to send a diplomatic message to Ammon saying, why are you bothering us? And he goes through this whole story in his letter of how we entered into the land and we're not bothering you and why are you starting with us? And the people of Ammon respond to the letter saying, you took our land 300 years ago. And they're very agitated and upset, and it ends up with war. But as part of the back and forth letter, Yiftach refers to Ammon, and he also refers to Moav. He says, you know, you're no better than Moav, who we beat before, so why are you starting with us? But the way that Malbim says it is that maybe Moav and Ammon attack together. We know that Moav and Ammon are brothers originally, right, going all the way back to the family of Lot, and they live side by side. So if you read Moab here as being the attack in the time of Yiftach, then the enemies are indeed in order. I haven't seen anybody else really tackle that. The list of the Shoftim being out of order is much more fascinating for the Mefarshim. So if you go back to what we had said last week about Ralbag's view was that the point of the list being in this way is to juxtapose the better Shoftim with the weaker Shoftim. Weaker not necessarily physically, but weaker from the standpoint of the righteousness that we perceive. So the way that Ralbag looked at this list was that Bidan, who has experiences of not only miracles, but some kind of association with Hashem, what exactly it is unclear, is better than Yerubal, Gidon, and Shmuel is better than Yiftach. So it's going sort of back and forth, is what we saw from Ralbag last time. However, most Mefarshim, most commentators say that the order here actually fits Shmuel's theme. Example, if you take a look at Abarbanel, which I brought you in source number one, he says, it mentioned, you see that? That's my translation there. It mentioned Yubal Gidon first? Okay. Vizacha Yubal Shu Gidon Rishona. It mentions Yubal, who is Gidon, first. Lefishana Sual Yadon Nisim Harbe. Vizacha Linfuos Harbe. Because he gets many miracles. And he has many prophecies. He gets many messages from Hashem. Va'achra Vizachar Bidon Shu Shimshon. And then it mentions Shimshon after that. And Shimshon has miracles, but no nevuah. Lefisha gam al yado nasu nisim. He gets miracles. Vekara Hashem vayaneu. He called out to Hashem and Hashem answered him. Vuzachal lemadrega mi madregos hanevuah. He must be on some kind of quasi-prophetic level. Ve'achlo zachar Yiftach, and then he mentions Yiftach. Shlo nasu ayado nisim. Yiftach has no miracles. Nothing that's overt at any rate. V'lozachal nevuah, no prophecy. Aval hayagibor chaya, but he's a warrior. Umizatzad zachar Shimshon konim liYiftach, and that's why he mentions Shimshon before Yiftach. Lo b'kedimat zmanit, not chronologically first. Kiim lefisha kadam elav b'malas hanisim v'akurval akel yisbarach. But he had the level of having miracles happen, and he had a greater proximity to Hashem. So you're going in order in terms of their relationship with Hashem. So first you have Gidon, who gets a lot, miracles, prophecy, and so on. Then you decrease in level, and you get Shimshon, who has miracles, not so much nevuah. And then you get Yiftach, who's got none of that, but at least he's a gibor. And then after all of them, Zachar Shmuel as Atzmo, Shmuel mentioned himself. Ki im hayoso gadol shebechol ha-shoftim. Granted, Shmuel is the best of the shoftim. Lios Shmuel hu ha-kosev, since Shmuel's one writing this, ratzal ha-haktin atzmo. He wanted to minimize his role. V'nizkar v'achron v'gam le-yoso achron bezman. He's mentioned last, and it also makes sense because he is the last one chronologically. So the way Abarbanel reads this is that the list is going from greatest to least. And again, the point still being, Hashem can help you with any of them. And if you'll say, well, why is Shmuel at the end? He is of the belief counter what we said in the Medrash last week, that Shmuel chooses to put himself at the end. Last week, remember, we saw the view that Shmuel names himself in the third person specifically because he isn't even aware of what he's saying. He's just expressing the prophecy that's being sent to him, and that's why
he's also humble.
Well, that's again, that's a Barbanel's view. That's not the Medrash's view. The Medrash's view is that Shmuel isn't even the one putting these words out there. It's Hashem who is sending it. That's a Barbanel. Radak has a similar idea.
Yeah, but if they still don't address the issue of why they missed some of them out.
No, because everybody takes it as a given that he's not listing every enemy and he's not listing every experience. Yeah, they take that as a given.
Do you have any reason for that?
I mean, how long is he going to stand there lecturing the people?
That they all go with.
Malbim also sees a structure here. He says it's the divine rescue that's involved. And take a look at source number two, where I brought it for you. Sometimes Hashem sold us to the enemies such that the enemies ruled us completely. That's what happens with Sisera. In Sisera, in the time when we're living under Canaan, Canaan is in control. Uviat Plishtim, be made Shimshon, or the Plishtim in the time of Shimshon. Right? Remember, the Plishtim come to the people of Yehuda and say, you better turn over Shimshon to us. Shayisrael tachas yadam, the Jews were underneath their control. Upa'amim rak lachem ubam, va'adem lo shaltu aleihem. But sometimes the enemy fought against us, but was not in control. Like earlier in Sefer Shmuel, where the Plishtim fought against us, they fought a battle, they were not in control. Both the war that they won, right, in Perek Dalet, and then the war later on in Perek Zayin. Umelach Moab bimei Yiftach, or like Moab, in the days of Yiftach, it's Moab slash Ammon, but again, Malbim believes that it's Moab that's the key in that battle. They crossed the Yarden to fight against us. So the way he reads it is that there's an order here based on whom they fought. So Yerubal and Shimshon first, because they saved us from domination by the enemy. And then Yiftach and Shmuel saved us from attacks that were not domination by the enemy. So that's the way that they look at it. I'm certainly not disagreeing that you can try to find order within this list, but I wonder if the point here is actually not Davka. Let's present it in a disorderly way. Specifically, let's do it in a disorderly way. In order to accentuate the message that Hashem has always appointed leaders and Hashem has always taken care of you. Rav Soloveitchik used to point out in his Shiurim on Tisha B'Av that the kinos are out of order, meaning they go back and forth between ancient disasters and then more modern disasters. So sometimes it's about the Churban, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and then sometimes it's about the Crusades and later battles. Sometimes it's about communal suffering. Not battles. There weren't battles. Massacres. Sometimes it's about communal disaster and the harm that befell a community, and sometimes it's about like the son and daughter of Rabbi Yishmael, and it's about individual harm and suffering. And Rav Soloveitchik there says it's the mourner's disordered and chaotic sense of suffering which defies order and structure. So I wonder if here it's not the positive flip side of that, where Shmuel is saying, Hashem always helped us. There was this, there was that, there was this enemy, there was that enemy, there was this Shofet, there was that Shofet, and he's trying to convey to them that the universal theme of it is, Hashem's taking care of us all along, why are you guys looking for a king?
But it's not Shmuel saying those words. You said Hashem's.
Again, that's the Medrash's statement that is coming from Hashem. But once again, that's the question. Abarbanel clearly is presenting a different view, and he's not the only one to do so, as we saw last week.
So is it not a certainty that Hashem has put these words in his mouth, or?
The truth of the matter is, everything. I don't know what that means. You can't translate a word with a dictionary without it being interpretation. Dictionaries are also interpretation. The problem that the Medrash is wrestling with, again, is that Shmuel calls himself Shmuel instead of me.
Yeah.
That's the problem the Medrash is dealing with.
Right.
You can answer that by saying it's style, and that was what some of the commentators said. You can answer it by saying he's just presenting Hashem's message. The weakness in saying that he's just presenting Hashem's message is that that's not the way Nevuah normally works. Only Moshe is presenting word for word what Hashem tells him to do. The Nevi'im in general, as the Gemara says, are conveying their words, in their words, a vision that they've seen. And that's why it's difficult to take that point of view. The Medrash is simply offering you an attempt to solve a specific problem in terms of the word choice as we discussed. Okay. One other note. We mentioned how many enemies here in Pasuk Tes? Three. How many Shoftu did we mention?
Four.
It's odd. Well, asymmetrical there.
Including himself.
Including himself, but it's asymmetrical, right?
Yeah.
So the question is, how do we view Shmuel in this sentence? And here what we find is that the teachings of Chazal, of our sages, actually take Shmuel out of this pasuk, so to speak, and put him with Moshe and Aharon from the beginning of this passage, where we talk about Hashem setting up Moshe and Aharon. So it's Moshe, Aharon, Shmuel on the one hand, and Gidon, Yiftach, Shimshon on the other hand. So take a look at source number 3, where you see the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. This is a classic. We learned this Gemara in the beginning of learning Sefer Shoftim. Va'omer, the pasuk says, Va'yomer Shmuel el ha'am, Hashem asher asah es Moshe b'yes Aharon. Notice the Gemara pauses. Right? Shmuel says to them, God who set up Moshe and Aharon, That was our earlier in the chapter. Ve'omer, and it says, Ve'ishlach Hashem es Yehubal ves Bedan ves Yiftach ves Shmuel. Shokal hakasuv shlosha kalei olam kishlosha chamurei olam. The pasuk balances three lightweights with three heavyweights. Lomar lach Yerubal bidaro kimoshe bidaro. The lesson being, your shofet is your shofet. Whoever Hashem picks to save you, whoever Hashem puts in power, you treat them like the shofet of that time. The Gemara also quotes, I didn't bring it here, the pasuk that says that when you have a problem, you go to the shofet, Asher Yehiyah Bayamim Haheim, who will be around in those days. And the Gemara says, well, what did you think? What other shofet did you think you were going to go to? And the answer is, it's to teach you, as this does, that Yerubal Bidoro Kimoshe Bidoro. Yerubal Gidon in his generation is like Moshe in his. Bidon Bidoro Ki Aaron Bidoro. Shimshon in his day is like Aaron in his. And Yiftach Bidoro Ki Shmuel Bidoro. Yiftach and Shmuel Alam Dachasha Filu Kal Shabakalin, even the lightest of the light. Vinismana Parnas Alatzibur, he is made the leader. Harayu Ka'abir Shaba'abirim, he is like the mightiest of the mighty. The main message here is to empower all shoftim. The Yerushalmi actually in Rosh Hashanah adds that Shmuel's name is added, it's moved from Moshe and Aaron to be with Yiftach, Bedan, and Yerubal, Gidon, in order to say Davka, that he's to give his weight on their list to show that they matter as well. It also demonstrates the rabbinic insistence, though, that Shmuel is unlike the shoftim who preceded him. Meaning, what we're saying is, take him out of that Yiftach, you know, list. He doesn't belong in that list. He really is not like that. He is more in line with Moshe and Aaron. Something that plays out in Midrashim in different ways. I'll give you an example. Take a look at source number 4. This Midrash is taken from the Midrash on the beginning of Parshas Noach. It's a classic Midrash. You've heard this one before. When Noach is introduced to us, we are told, Tamim haya bedorosav. He was tamim, he was complete, he was without defect, without flaw, in his generations. And the Midrash is bothered, why did you need to say that word? What do you mean, in his generations? Say, tamim hayah, you're done. What does bedorosav mean? So there are different schools of thought. One school of thought is to say, despite his generation, even living at a time like that, he was still tamim, which is amazing. And then the alternative read is, no, he was great compared to his generation. Put him in someone else's time, and not necessarily, because we always need to, you know, drag people down. But take a look. The Midrash here, number 4, picks up on, first of all, the fact that the word is superfluous, as well as the fact that it is in the plural. Right? The fact that it says doro tav, instead of saying doro, is also significant to the Midrash. So it's multiple generations. Now, you could say it's generation pre-flood and generation after the flood. That will be the simple read. But the Midrash says the following. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah have a machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda Omar, Bedoro Sav Hayat Tzadik, in his generation he was righteous. Ha'ilu haya Bedoro Shel Moshe, O Bedoro Shel Shmuel, if he had been in Moshe's day, Shmuel's day, Lo Hayat Tzadik, he would not have been righteous. And Rabbi Nechemiah says, what are you talking about? Umayim b'doro savayat tzadikim, in his generations he was righteous. Ilu haya b'doro shel Moshe, b'doro shel Shmuel, achas kama v'kama. How much more so? Had he been around with Moshe and Shmuel? I don't bring this here in order to debate Noach's status. As far as I'm concerned, the only voice I want to hear is Rabbi Nechemiah. But the point that I think is germane here is the fact that when we make the comparison, we say the generation of Moshe and the generation of Shmuel. That's the way that we look at Shmuel. I didn't reproduce it on the sheet, just one second. I didn't reproduce it on the sheet, but last week we saw the Midrash Tehillim that talked about Shmuel's Nevoah here and the third person and all that, and it called Shmuel there Rabban Shel Nevi'im. Wow. The Master Navi. Right? Moshe is Av HaNevi'im. Moshe is the source for all Nevoah. As the Rambam says, Moshe hearing from Hashem directly, and the Jews witnessing Hashem talking to Moshe, is what gives legitimacy to all Nevuah. So Moshe is unique. But Shmuel is labeled Rabban Shel Nevi'im, the master of Nevi'im. That's the way that we look at him. Ricky.
Was the generation of Moshe that righteous?
So we generally assume that the reference here is more about being with Moshe than being with his generation. Moshe's generation happens to have tremendous righteousness, all mistakes notwithstanding. Shmuel's generation would have been the bigger challenge. Right? Shmuel's generation seems to have some trouble.
Yeah, back and forth.
Well, from the beginning, they're not going to the Mishkan, and then, you know, so on and so forth. Okay. So, that's just going back to that list. That's going back to the list. Okay. If you take a look now at Psukim Yud Bet to Tet Vav, sentences 12 to 15. No, warm water. Okay. Yud Bet to Tet Vav, sentences 12 to 15. He then goes further. He has told the Jews, Hashem saved you in Egypt. He has told the Jews, Hashem saved you in the time of the Shoftim. And now he moves to his own day. So we already read this last week, but let's take a look at it again. Pasuk Yud Bet, sentence 12. Vatiru, and you saw, ki Nachash melech b'nei Amon ba'alechem, that Nachash, king of Amon, attacked you. Vatomruli, and you said to me, notice now he says me. That's another argument against that midrash that he's speaking in the third person, because he's not, you know, it says me. Lo ki melechim lo chaleinu. No. The king is going to rule over us. We're not having a shofet. We are going to have a melech. V'Hashem Elokeichem Malkechem. But he says, Hashem is your king, not some human being. Ve'ata, and now he says, Hine ha-melech asher b'chartem asher shaltem. Here is the king you asked for, the king you chose, and Hashem has given him to you. Pausing there. The problem that we expressed already last week when we read this sentence is that their request for a king preceded the threat from Nachash. So how do you take it? So Abarbanel, and similarly in Malbim, take it the way that it's in source number 5. Shehanashim mitiv am yosifu lachato. People naturally continue to sin. But then they get in trouble, and then they seek out Hashem. That's human nature. The Israel lo hayu kein. Jews, though, were not like that. Kiim hayos shera'ui shachrei sheshalu melech miyad bo nachash melech b'nei amon alayhem v'hayaz elehem onesh bekashasam. He says the Jews didn't do that. You asked for a king, which was a wrong thing to do. You were attacked by Nachash Melech Amon, and you should have viewed that as the trouble that's going to spur you to do tshuva. And instead, you said, we still want a melech. And of course, Shaul beat Nachash. And they say, oh great, Shaul is our melech. So the way that Barbanel reads it, and again, it's similar in Malbim, is that what Shmuel has done here is to lop off the first part of the history. To ignore, you asked for a king first, because that's not his point. His point is, Nachash came, and you should have said, we don't need a king. And instead, you persisted in wanting a melech, and indeed, you got what you wanted, and you celebrated, right? Look, you got a king, and Hashem has given you a king, and Abarbanel adds, sometimes a person wants to do something they're not supposed to do. So, they know they shouldn't do it, they give in to the Yetzer Hara, and they go do what they weren't supposed to do, and then, it's gone. Okay, you indulged, you did what you weren't supposed to do, it was wrong, and hopefully the desire is now no longer as strong for them. But now you guys, you got a melech, and you persist in having a melech. You keep on you keep on supporting this structure in which you believe law is going to come from human beings instead of from Hashem. And then he says, Pasuk Yudalid. This was the pasuk that really confounded us, because it seems to be missing words. Im tira'u es Hashem. If you will revere Hashem, va'avadetem oso, and you will serve Him, you can do the mitzvos, ushmatem bekolo, you'll hear Him, listen to His voice, velo samru es pi Hashem, and you don't rebel, don't violate any mitzvos, don't, you have to fulfill the positives, you have to fulfill the asay, the commandments, don't violate the prohibitions, v'yisem gam atem, you will be, V'gam ha-melech Hashem alach aleichem, and the king who reigns over you after Hashem your God, achar Hashem alokechem. What is he saying? What's the cause and effect here? So Abarbanel offers two reads. Malbim combines them very nicely. So I brought you Malbim on the sheet. If you take a look at source number 6. The way to read this is this king you chose and so on, if you will revere Hashem and you will serve him and listen to his voice and you don't rebel, then you and your king, v'yisem gam atem, you and your king will be associated with Hashem and protected by Hashem. That's the promise of v'yisem gam atem. So Malbim writes, Az Yashem Malkechem Aolech Lifnechem Lilachem Lachem Eloshiyazchem, then Hashem will be your king to go before you, to fight for you, and to rescue you. V'hu Acharav Kesar Tzeva'o Aolech Lifkudaso, and the king will be like his general, going before Hashem, following his orders, and he will become your intermediary. So the payoff in this sentence is, in the event that you do as you were supposed to do and you listen to Hashem, then you and your king will be with Hashem and protected by Hashem. That's the way he reads it. But if you don't, we get to the last sentence in this section, Pasuk Tedvav, if you don't, Bim lo sishme'u bekol Hashem, if you don't listen to Hashem's voice, umrisem es pi Hashem, and you rebel against Hashem. Vaisa yad Hashem bachem uva avoseichem, the hand of God will be against you and against your ancestors. And we asked when we read this, what's your ancestors? What does it even mean? Yeah, Ricky.
Oh, I wasn't talking about the ancestors. I was just going to make a comparison with the Shema. And the Shema is also the positive first. And then, because this is a point we mentioned last week.
Yes.
So the negative is after. And if you don't, this is what
right.
will happen.
Right.
The Tochacha is the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's consistently that way in the Torah. Correct. Correct. So the, yes, Sandy.
Forgive me if I'm misunderstanding, but at first it seems like there's a separation between you, plural, and your king, as opposed to being your whole nation, because surely the king is part of the nation.
Well, I think that's what drives Malbim, saying the king is the intermediary. The king is going to lead you, like you've asked for, but he's going to be a servant of Hashem as well.
So then in the punishment, it doesn't mention the king.
That's why.
I guess, yeah, at that point he's going to be with you, yeah. But you're right, it doesn't single him out. We will see him singled out at the end of the parak, which is not there yet.
But I think it fits in perfectly. Yeah. In other words, if we're saying that he's the intermediary, then really Hashem will be with you and with your king. But if you sin, Hashem won't be with you. But kind of the understanding is that this king is going to be that servant of Hashem.
Yeah, it's just that if you jump to the last sentence in the parak,
hang
on a second. Just go to the last sentence first, Pasuk Chafei, where we're told, V'im hareya tareyu, and if you do bad things, gam atem gam malkechem tisafu, you and your king. So it is funny that the king is missing from this sentence, because he is going to show up in Chafei. I don't have an answer, but I think, Sandy, you're making an interesting point.
But I would have thought that he didn't have to mention it, since he had included the king and the Nazir all together previously.
Yeah.
You can assume that he's referring to the king.
Yeah, but again, but he goes out of his way to mention him in Chafei. That's what I'm finding strange.
Okay.
But what I wanted to talk about here is the ancestors. So there are various ways you can make the language work. The easiest way, in my mind, is to look back to Pasuk Zayin. Go back to sentence 7. Right? In Pasuk Zayin, we were told, Shmuel says to the nation, I am going to judge before you, before Hashem, is called Tzikos Hashem Asher Asayitchem Ve'azav Oseichem, all of the things that Hashem did for you and your ancestors. So now he's saying, and if you don't listen, then Hashem is going to cause harm to you and your ancestors. It's a parallel structure. That would have been the easiest answer to me.
That makes sense.
Sorry?
It's a new kind of human ancestors. It's a fact, beginning.
Yes.
But it can't punish the virus.
Right. No, it's just poetic structure would have been my answer.
Yeah.
Radak says, Av doesn't have to mean ancestor. right? Like with Moshe, Vayisimeni La'av Leparo, actually it's Yosef, is Vayisimeni La'av Leparo, the Av is a leader of some kind. So how about Techem? And that would answer the question that Sandy asked also, maybe that's the answer. That's Melech. About Techem is actually a reference to the king. You could give that as the answer. Rashi says, his hand will be against you as it was against your ancestors when they sinned in the past. That's Targum Yonasan as well. But the Gemara takes it literally. Take a look at source number 7. Talking about the Chavri, who were enemies of the Jews and lived in the area of Persia. I added in the word Chavri. The words that are in brackets are words that I added just to clarify things. So, Gazru al Gimel Mipnei Gimel. The Chavri made 3 decrees because of 3 actions. Gazru al Habasar. They did three simple actions of ours. Gazru al Habasar. They prohibited Shechita. Mibnei Hamatanos, because the Jews stole the gifts that they were supposed to give to the Kohanim when they shechted. You're supposed to give the Kohanim certain things. You didn't do it. So as a punishment, we end up with a decree that you can't shecht.
Elisans.
Talking about the Jews who didn't give the Matnot Kehuna to the Kohanim, not Elisans. This is an entirely different era. This is much later in Jewish history. Gazru al Merchatzos, they decreed against bathhouses, meaning that this Chavri group decreed that we would not be able to use bathhouses. Why Mibnei HaTevila? Because Jews weren't going to mikvah. Not that the Chavri thought they were punishing us for wrongdoing. The Chavri just are issuing decrees. But we experience them as a punishment for a particular sin. And the last one, Kamachadati Shachvi, they exhumed bodies. Mibnei Shesmechim B'yom Eidam, because the Jews rejoiced on the day of the festivals of the non-Jews. We celebrated their pagan holidays. And he quotes our pasuk, Shnemar Vaisa Yad Hashem Bachem Uva Voseichem, that it will be against you and your ancestors. He takes it actually literally.
What does that mean, exhumed bodies? Like,
they dug them up. They desecrated the cemetery. Yeah, they desecrated Jewish cemeteries. Yes, Susan.
What does it mean? We keep using the term intermediary between God. Is that supposed to be like a Navi? Like, if he's an intermediary, what's his position as an intermediary?
Right, so that's exactly Shmuel's point. This goes back to something we discussed a lot back in chapters 8 and 9. And it was the whole discussion about why they want a melech as opposed to a shofet. So to condense it in one sentence, the people want to have a king who will govern as all the other nations are governed, where the king creates the laws, and the king is the arbiter of all, and it's all coming from a human source. Whereas that Hashem's vision of a melech is more or less a shofet on steroids. Hashem wants the melech to be somebody who is going to take orders from Hashem also. He's going to listen to the Navi, he's going to listen to the Kohen Gadol and the Urim V'Tumim and so on. And ultimately, that's what Hashem said to Shmuel. Hashem said to Shmuel, go ahead, tell them they're going to have a king, but it's going to be the one I select. And that's something we've seen play out over the chapters, and that's what you're seeing here as well. Hashem is saying he's going to be an intermediary. He's not going to be the source of your wars. He's not going to be the one who decides what to do. He's going to take instructions from me. That's the idea. Which happened to an extent with Shaul and David. It didn't happen with some of the other kings, and that's where we have to go in Sefer Shmuel, is to see how that plays out, because that's one of the most important themes for the entire book, is the tug of war over the Malchus, over the throne. Is it God's throne, or is it the people's throne? Okay.
Can I just think of something? In the time of the Midbar, with Moshe Rabbeinu, in some ways, of course, there were all these issues, but basically it was one Am. When you get to Shoftim, you have tribals. It's all tribal. And it seems to me that the natural progression from the tribal is to once again to unify the nation, to become one nation under one king, under the direct orders of Hashem, or
right,
the Navi. So it's like a natural thing, which just makes me think that's why Moshe Rabbeinu, through Hashem, already informed Bnei Yisrael that they would be unified under a king.
Right. So there's some debate as to what went on in the period of the Shoftim. Meaning, if you read the book straight, it sounds like, as you're saying, the tribes have sort of gone their own way. And you see things like Devorah struggling to get different Shvatim to respond to her call for battle. At the same time, Abarbanel is of the belief that the Shoftim were federal. that they actually, however they did it logistically in those days, that they actually controlled the nation as a whole. So that will determine whether this narrative works. Okay, but I really wanted to get to Tetzayin Techav Hei here. We're not going to finish it, but you have to see this. This is truly remarkable. The message of this section is going to be the following. Overall, Shmuel is going to create a miracle, which is going to demonstrate their wrongdoing in seeking a king. They are going to do tshuva and come back to Hashem. And Shmuel is going to say, don't worry about it, Hashem will take you back, and I will take you back. That's the overarching theme for this next section. But boy, is this interesting. So let's see, starting from Pasuk Tet Zayin, sentence 16. Gam ata, and now, this is the third part of Shmuel's speech. Hisyatzvu ura'u es hadavar hagadol hazeh. He says, stand and see this great thing. I haven't seen anybody comment on this, but his yatzvu u'ru'u is what Moshe says before he splits the Yamsuf. Right? His yatzvu u'ru'u is Yeshua Hashem. So I haven't seen anybody note that, but it's very much here. They see this great thing, Asher Hashem osa le'enechem, which Hashem is going to do right before your very eyes. Halo kitzir chitim hayom. Today is the day of the harvest of wheat. Ekra el hasad shuas time. The Ekra el Hashem, v'itein kolosu matar, I'm going to call out to God, and God will send lightning and rain. Which is a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a bad thing.
It's a disaster. It's very funny, because you read through the Mefarshim, the standard commentaries to this, and some of them are European. And so one of them says, I don't really understand. Is this such a bad thing? It rains all the time. What do you mean? And the answer is, oh, I guess in the Middle East it doesn't rain. Yes, you're right. It doesn't.
I was shocked when I came to Canada and there was a rain in the summer. How can that be?
So he says, there's going to be lightning and rain. I'm sorry, thunder and rain. Udu'u uru'u. You should know and see Kira Aschem Rabbah Asher Asisem Beinei Hashem Lishol Lachem Melech. Your wickedness is great. What you did in the eyes of Hashem. Notice the eyes, right? Hashem is going to do this before your eyes. What you did was bad in Hashem's eyes in asking for a king. That's Shmuel's opening couple of sentences. And sure enough, Pasuk Yuches, Vayikra Shmuel el Hashem. Shmuel calls out to God. Vayitein Hashem kolos umatar bayom ahu. Hashem sent lightning and rain on that day. Vayira kol ha'am me'od es Hashem ve'es Shmuel. The nation at this point is very afraid of God, and they're very afraid of Shmuel. Pause here. Sorry? Yes. Yes. Very much so. Ve'aminu b'Hashem, Moshe Abdo, v'yira'u amet Hashem. And as a result of this, they have that yira as well. So good. It's another parallel. You're right. First of all, what do you think? Was this Shmuel's idea or was this Hashem's idea? What do you think? Read the psukim and tell me.
I'm just confused because this is after the fact. He says in the passage before that because you wanted a king, and I'm going to send this terrible thing. Why didn't he do it before?
And we'll see. We're going to come to that.
Okay.
Not this week, though. It'll be after Sukkot. This it sounds like it's Shmuel, right? This is Shmuel's idea. Shmuel asks Hashem to do this. Very interesting thing, the idea of a Navi calling in a lightning strike, so to speak. It's fascinating. And Moshe does that.
Moshe
and Yoshua does. And Yoshua does that in the war in defending Gibeon. But Leo does it and gets in trouble.
My book translates Kolot as thunder.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what I said. No, I can use lightning in a sentence without retranslating the pasuk. That's correct. The pasuk is indeed thunder. The statement here is such a strong statement that Shmuel is making, but there are different ways to read the content of the message. Three different approaches, and really you could subdivide them, but three overall approaches as to what this message exactly is. What is Shmuel trying to say here? before we see the sources.
If you ask for something, I shouldn't give it to you, even if it's meant.
So one way to look at it is that is the way Abarbanel does, right? Which is to say, this is an educational message, and yes, sometimes you ask for bad things, and you get them. If you jump to source number 11, this is Abarbanel. Vani achshov, I think, shasav Shmuel kidei lahatir safek echad hayanofel b'tvarav. He did this to resolve a particular doubt that they could have had about his words when he says it's bad to have a king. V'uki imay hashel az melech ra'a b'enei akel yisbarach, if Hashem doesn't want you to have a king, eich bachar Hashem yisbarach b'sha'ul. How did he pick Sha'ul? Omar gam ata yisyatzvu ro'u. So he says, you stand and see. Wrote to Omar, Hine Hakel Yisbarach Nasan Abchira Ba'adam Livchor Batav V'lim Os Bara. Hashem gives a person the ability to choose that which is good and to reject that which is bad. Right? Those who say Tefillah Zaka before Yom Kippur are familiar with that turn of speech. V'im Hu Yishal Mashe Yirtze Lo Yimne Eihu Mimenu V'Yitain Ritzono Yetov Ora. You ask for something, Hashem is going to give it to you, and it may not be the best thing for you. Now, usually we take it the other way. We say Hashem Hatov Be'inav Yaaseh. Right? And Hashem does that which is good in his eyes. But Abarbanel says, no, what Shmuel is telling them is, the fact that he gave you a king doesn't mean it's a good thing. Hashem could say, okay, fine, let's see what you do with it. It's a remarkable idea, a dangerous idea. That's one approach. What other approaches could you have to explain this? We have two others. Yeah.
So my first impression was because he just did something very powerful. Like he showed Hashem's power, but he showed the power came from within him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in other words, as he was that intermediary.
Right.
So he was going back to say, you had what you needed in
mm-hmm.
me.
Right.
But, yeah. You know, and now, I feel like I hope this isn't anything negative for Shaul, because my first impression was, why is he making, you know, like, now that it is...
Poor Shaul.
You want them to respect Shaul and to not think... You know, again, they looked at him. Here's our mistake. You know, so...
Right.
So at the same time, he can be saying that Shaul will do this.
Right.
But you didn't need to ask for it.
Right. So we're going to come back to what he does to bolster Shaul, because there's more to this parak. But take a look at source number 9, because Rashi says what Jeanette is suggesting here. He says, "Ushem shayidei tefilasi ani yachola shanoses ha'itim." Just as by praying I can change the seasons, kachim pagabachem milchama hayakoch tefilasi la'amod al ha'oyev. So too, if you encountered war, my prayer would have been enough. V'lo ayisem tzvichim l'shom melech bechayai. You didn't need to ask for a king while I was alive. V'avav bishenizakein. Yeah, I may be old. Hello, Kitzir Chitim Hayom. He says, today is the wheat harvest, Vagashamim Siman Klala, and rain is a sign of a curse. Rain is a bad thing at that point. Vikasha Bene HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lavi Puranus Chinam. And Hashem doesn't want to cause people to suffer for nothing. Afa Pichein Yesh Bikoach, and yet, I have the ability, Vekra Hashem Yitain Kolosu Matar, and I can call in a thunderstorm against you.
That's very strong.
Yes, it is very strong.
He's just taking it so personally. You know, on the one hand, he's advocating for Hashem. On the other hand, it's like, but you had me all along, and look what I can do.
Because his point wasn't that. Again, go back to why they asked for a king. What they want is to replace this shofet institution in which their guidance comes through Hashem. And that's what he's railing against. He says, you didn't need to replace me. Your shofet system was working just fine. Shmuel recognizes, and we said this way back when, Shmuel recognizes that the Torah does present a mitzvah of having a melech. But what's wrong is that they did it when they had a working shofet.
But I think then about the beginning of Abraham saying, please don't destroy Sodom and Gomorrah because there are good people there. Instead, Shmuel was saying, I'm going to...
He's damaging the harvest. Well, it's not destroyed. It's not destroyed. It just has to dry out.
Okay.
It's not destroyed. Yeah. If you take a look at the Ran in source number 10, I go back to the Ran, especially because he was really the one who expressed very clearly this distinction between Shofet and Melech in terms of the connection to Hashem. So in source number 10, he says, "Du shigigaschem." Shmuel is saying, you have to know your mistake. Asher bechartem b'meshe yera ebeinechem betukan sidur yenechem ativi. You chose that which you thought in your eyes was the way to manage your natural affairs. She'ain't okay, it ain't so. Aval hadavik binyan ha'eloki, one who adheres to Hashem's word, that such a person, mishaneh inyana tivi kiritzono, can change nature at will. If you would be willing to take direction from Hashem, you wouldn't have any need for a melech. So that's another approach. The other approach, which was the first one I expected people to say, is the approach of Radak, who simply says, this is straight out punishment. Go back to number 8, please. Because having rain at the harvest was a great novelty for them. They were very afraid. And they said, pray for your servants, pray to Hashem, let us not die. Meaning, this thing is just a terrible experience. He says, it's a message of you're in trouble then. You're in trouble now. He's trying to show them it was bad, and now you're getting hit as a result. So it could be punishment, like Radak. It could be rebuke, saying, you know, you picked the wrong horse, effectively. You had what you needed in a shofate, and you went looking for a human melech for reasons I cannot fathom. Or a barbanel who says that it's educational to say, don't assume that just because you have a melech, that means Hashem is on the same page as you. Hashem can also send rain if you ask for it at the harvest. It's not necessarily a good thing. That's the idea.
So is Radak saying that he's doing it to bring them to tshuva? Because the as we said at the beginning, the war itself didn't work.
Right.
They, instead of doing what naturally people do, they continued in their way, and so he had to do something stronger to bring them.
Right. I think the goal ultimately is tshuva. Yes, I think that is what is desired here.
Well, that's my big question. We're going to discuss why he's doing it now.
Why now as opposed to before? Yes, we actually discussed it a couple of weeks ago, but it's going to come up here as well.
Good.
Yeah. Yes, Susan.
If he is using punishment to show God's way, wouldn't it hurt them? Hey, yeah, that's why we want a mad God. We don't want to keep getting punishment.
Well, no, because they don't throw off Hashem. This isn't about idolatry. They're not leaving God and separating the
people. I didn't mean idolatry. I meant God showing them, hey, you are not following me or Jewish will. You get this punishment of rain when you don't need it. So they're thinking, yeah, that's the whole problem. We just want a government run by, not by God, but by man, so these bad things don't happen to us.
Right, but first, in terms of wording, it's not just rain when you don't need it. It's rain when it's destructive.
Okay, yeah.
First of all, it delays your ability to do the harvest immediately because it's raining. But number two, because when you harvest, you need the grain to dry out in order to be able to grind it up. If your grain is soaking wet, you're not able to grind it up, and it can even get moldy. And at that point, it does get damaged and ruined. Can't make matzah out of it. But in terms of the overall question, choosing a king isn't going to stop them from being vulnerable to Hashem's judgment, nor do they think so. Yeah. It's not as though we choose a king, and again, we go off to be, you know, secular or worship idols. Hashem's breath with them is still very much in force, and they never said they were walking away from it. His covenant with them is still there. You know what? I'm looking at the clock and realizing we have a chance to get through this and not have to start from scratch at the beginning of November resurrecting the whole story, so I'd like to see if we can do that. That's what I said in the... Oh, you weren't here. Yes, because... Yes. We'll tell you after. So, what's particularly worth noting here within these three views is what I put for you in number 12, which is depending on what the message of this rain is, will determine which part of the miracle was what mattered. Meaning, if I take Radak's view that it's the punishment element, then it's the fact that the rain is destructive for their harvest. If I take the view, on the other hand, if I take the view of Radak that it's punishment, then the answer is that it's being harmful. If on the other hand I take the view of Rashi, who says, look, I can change nature with my prayer, even though that's not the way things are supposed to happen, then it's the fact that the rain is out of season. Whereas if I take the view of Abarbanel and the Drushos, if I take the view of Abarbanel, and actually fits in with the Drushos Haran as well, and maybe a little bit with Rashi too, then it's that the rain comes at Shmuel's request. Sorry, now I realize what I did in my notes. I did something different in my notes that I have to unpack and explain. There are three special traits of this miracle. Trait number one is the rain is destructive. Trait number two is the rain is out of season. And trait number three is the fact that it comes when Shmuel calls it. So if I say that what's important is the rain being destructive, that's very much in line with Radak. If I take the view that it's about the rain being at Shmuel's request, that fits with Abarbanel, who says that the point was to teach them that, you know, just because you've got a king doesn't mean it's a good thing. And it fits with Rashi as well, Rashi / the Ran, who says that it's about the fact that you asked for a king when you had somebody who could do something like this. The other view, which I didn't mention before, and that was what confused me in my notes, Professor Eli Tsur, I think, is the one, I forget, who is the editor of the Dot Mikra on Shmuel. Is it? No, it's Professor Kiel. So he has a slightly different view along the lines of Rashi. He says that rain coming out of season reflects asking for a king prematurely before Shmuel passes away. So that fits with the message being the rain is out of season. Right, that was, I forgot to mention it before, and that's what I was missing. Okay, so take a look now at the last bits of this parak. We're going to see if we can make it through this. Pasuk Chaf. Vayomer Shmuel el ha'am al tirau. Shmuel says to the nation, don't be afraid. Atem asisem es kol ha'ra'ah hazos. You did all these terrible things. Ach al tasur mechrei Hashem. Don't leave God. Vavadatem es Hashem b'chol avachem. Serve Hashem with your entire heart. Velo tasuru, and do not strike. Yachrei atou asher lo yo'ilu v'lo yatzilu kito hema. Because, or for, after that which is empty, which does not help, which does not rescue, it is empty. That's his opening part of this passage. And I'm already confused. Right? Normally you don't start by saying, don't be afraid, you did bad things. No, that's why I should be afraid. What do you mean, don't be afraid, you did bad things? And then also this double, don't stray, what is he referring to? So the Malbim says that the way to read this, and the simple read is, don't be afraid, tshuva is possible. But Malbim has another read. Take a look at source number 13. He says, I'm going to stick with my English translation. If God were angry at you without reason, then you would have reason to fear, as his desire regarding you changed from good to bad. If God simply zaps you and there's no particular cause that's identifiable, then you know you're in trouble. But since the cause for this harm is your bad deeds, then God's desire to benefit you hasn't changed. If only you will improve your deeds. So don't fear, but don't stray from after God. He says, the message is, don't be afraid. You know why this is happening to you. So don't abandon God. Don't stray from God. Because if you do, you will be following tohu. You will be following things that are empty, that are not able to help you. And then take a look at Pasuk HaBet, a famous Pasuk. Ki lo yitosh Hashem es amo. Right? Hashem will not abandon his nation. The phrase "Lo yitosh Hashem amo" comes up in different contexts, but Hashem will not abandon his nation. Ba'avur shemo hagadol, for his great name. Ki ho'il Hashem la'asos eschem lo la'am, because Hashem has sworn to make you his nation. Ho'il, Rashi says, means Hashem swore. We find that in a number of different circumstances, like the word Allah. Correct. But that's a very interesting sentence. Right? Saying Hashem won't abandon his nation because of his great name. What happened to because he likes us? What happened to because of the Avos? Because of his great name. The truth of the matter is, we're familiar with that in the Torah, right? Moshe and Yehoshua made those points to Hashem. Moshe especially, we're familiar with after the golden calf. You know what these Egyptians are going to say if you don't take them into Israel. They're going to say you couldn't do it and so forth. So one way to look at this is to say this is sort of last ditch appeal. In other words, we'd like it to be because Hashem loves us, but at least it'll be for His name. If for no other purpose than to prevent Chilul Hashem. Much as in Shmoneh Esrei, we say, Leman Shmo Be'ahava. We'd rather it be Be'ahava, with love. But at least it'll be Leman Shmo for His name's sake. That is one way to look at it. The Rav Chaim of Volozhin in his Nefesh HaChaim actually says that when you daven, you should do so not for your needs, but for God's needs. And just reframe your needs in the context of what Hashem needs. So in other words, you say, God, I know you don't like to see your creatures suffer, so please send healing. Or here, Hashem, look, if your nation is in exile, that causes Chilul Hashem. So daven for that, sincerely for that. However, Ralbag says something else. Take a look at Ralbag in source number 15. This is from Nehemiah. There's a pasuk in Nehemiah which is said as part of the morning davening. It's in source number 14, where he recounts the miracles Hashem performed when we came out of Egypt. Right? That's hopefully familiar. You place signs and wonders on all of them. You knew they had been cruel to them. You made a name for yourself like this day. That's what Nehemiah says about Hashem. You made a name for yourself. So look at Ralbag and his comment there. He says, again with my translation, regarding your flow of spiritual bounty upon Israel with these plagues with which you struck Pharaoh, his slaves, and his nation, there was no corruption at all in any plague, meaning no plague was inappropriate. For you knew that all of them had harmed Israel, torturing them greatly. Right? They deserved what they got. This point removes the doubt of how Pharaoh could have been punished when God hardened his heart. And the answer is, he was not punished for God's hardening of his heart. He deserved punishment for his harming of Israel. Meaning, he was not being punished for things that he did after his heart was hardened. He's being punished for things that he had done beforehand. And then the key part for us, and Hashem wished to benefit Israel by punishing him, for they would then know that he is God. It's educational for us. When Hashem creates his name, the point is that his presence becomes obvious, his creation becomes obvious, and then people become more loyal. Therefore, Hashem promised Avram that he would create these new wonders when they left Egypt. In order that, we should specifically learn this lesson. So what Shmuel is saying here is that Hashem will not abandon you. Hashem is not going to abandon his nation, and that will lead to the creation of his name such that you will be inspired to follow him. That's the idea. Hashem is not abandoning you, and what that also means is he's not abandoning his melech. The king is the king, and this goes back to finally answer the questions that people keep asking. Why are you doing this only now? Why didn't you do this before? The answer is because fundamentally the king is legit. Take a look at source number 16, where Abarbanel says it. Abarbanel writes, Heyosha temasisem. I didn't think we were going to get to the last five sources, so I didn't translate them. Heyosha temasisem es kol ra'ah hazos. Since you did all these bad things, rotzaloma ra'ala asmechem b'sheilas hamelach, meaning you harmed yourself by asking for a king. Hine lo yechashev lochem chait mipas alokai yisbarach. Hashem still will not consider it a chait. However, lo tasu me'acharei Hashem, don't stray from after God, doing all the things He has warned you not to do. Fundamentally, you get to keep your king. The Shaul is legitimate, and the Melech is legitimate. Jumping to 17, where another comment from Barbanel, the end of the parak. Shaisa she'elas ha'melech devar harashus. You were allowed to ask for a king. Ulazel lo azu malkam below asaro Hashem yisbarach aleihem. That's why they don't say now, okay, no more Shaul, and why he doesn't, and why Hashem doesn't say that the king is prohibited to you. That's the idea. One more point. The last three psukim here are very, very important. Chav Gimel. Gam anochi, me too, he says. Chalil oli mechatol Hashem mechadol ispalel ba'adchem. He said it will be a desecration for me to sin against God and not to daven for you. V'horesi aschem b'derech hatovah v'yishara, and to guide you in the right path. Meaning I'm not quitting now. Ach, Yeruas Hashem, you have to revere God. Vavadatemo so be'emes b'chol avavchem, serve Him truly with all your heart. Ki re'u es Hashem higdil imachem, see the great thing He did with you. Higdil, because it was called Davar HaGadol in the beginning. See the great thing He did with you. Ve'im harea tareyu, and if you do bad things, gamatem gamalkechem tisafu. You're done, and your king is done. The king is answerable to God for your behavior. But what I wanted to note for you before that was, Shmuel says something very strong. He says, I would not sin it to Hashem to refuse to daven on your behalf. That's a really important line. The Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah, source number 18, says, how do you know, Minayin, how do you know that if somebody sins against somebody else, somebody hurts someone else, and then apologizes and says, I sinned, how do you know that the victim is considered a sinner if they don't forgive? And he says, from here, from the fact that he says, it will be a chait for me not to help you. So because they apologize, it's now the shoe's on the other foot. You're a sinner if you refuse to forgive. That's one point. Second point, source number 19, the Gemara in Brachos. Kol she'ef shelo levakesh rachamim achavero ve'enu mevakesh nikra chote. If you can daven for somebody else and you don't, that makes you a sinner. You have an obligation to daven for on behalf of others. And that, again, is drawn from here, where Shmuel says that he wouldn't sin by refusing to pray. And finally, Ralbag, on that in source number 20, says it's not just about davening for others, but any tov, any good that you could do for somebody else. It's a matter of chesed. And so Shmuel says, Horesi lach eschem b'derech hatava v'yesharah. He says, I'm going to teach you the right and proper way. That's because, he says, it's a chait if you refrain from helping others. That also has the status of a sin. So that the message here that Shmuel is giving is a message I think is actually really important, leading into Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, both in terms of the issue of forgiving others, and in terms of the issue of davening on their behalf. So God willing, as we said in the beginning, next week we do not have a class. In 2 weeks, as in a day after Tzom Gedalia, we'll have a pre-Yom Kippur shiur of some kind, God willing, and then we'll be off during from Yom Kippur through Sukkot, and we resume on what I'm told is October 31st.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.